Good Sunday morning, everybody. Welcome on in. It's Fighters Fury here on 790 The Ticket. Crazy night last night. I mean, my head was on a swivel. Ended up with like five screens up yesterday. I had Heat, Canes, Marlins were off to the side because they started pretty early, so I felt pretty good about where that was. I was, you know, peeking over, making sure they weren't blowing it. And then I had UFC on one screen and Showtime boxing on the other. It was good to have Showtime back up and running. And we'll get into that main event in a little bit, but I do want to start off with the UFC, as this was a really good card. This was a card that, you know, especially the main card looking into it, it was pretty stacked. A lot of big talent, a lot of big names, a lot of big potential. And guys, you want to see if they could get right, get going. And I thought we saw a lot of that. We saw a lot of the talent that you wanted to see showcased came through in a big way. And so, you know, let's dive a little bit into it. We'll start off with the main event because that's where all the story was with this. And, you know, Colby Covington versus Tyron Woodley. It was not the most entertaining fight in the world, but it did start turning, I think, the way a lot of people thought it was going to, which was Colby pouring it on and Tyron just really not having an answer for Colby. It was a weird ending where, you know, it was like a rib injury. He looked like he was going for a guillotine or something like that. And then all of a sudden something happened where he had a rib injury, stopped fighting. And so Colby ends up getting the TKO in the fifth round. And so this puts Colby in prime position again to be up and fighting for the title as he awaits what goes on with the welterweight championship between Gilbert Burns and Kamaru Usman. We'll see what happens there. But ultimately, I do think that it was a bit of a dud main event. That's not to take anything away from Colby's performance. I think that, you know, he still did what he had to do and did what he probably should have done for somebody at the point of where Tyron is in his career and where Colby is in his career. But look, Colby's a good fighter. I think that always gets lost in the BS. You know, a lot of people don't like his gimmick. I get it. With the climate that we're in, you know, I think it almost even takes away in some ways how good he is actually is in the cage. But I do think that it has definitely got him more noticed, you know, ever since he started going down this path. You know, there was a big shift in his career too, where he's going to MMA Masters. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about them on this show as all the South Florida gyms, most of the time the headlines go to ATT and they go to Hard Knocks 365, Black Zillions, whatever that conglomerate has been, you know, as they've shifted a lot of names, but everybody kind of knows that core group. And, you know, it's splintered out a little bit, but MMA Masters has been there for a long time and they're starting to really get a shine on the national stage. And they take somebody like Colby, who has, you know, who has been kind of an original from ATT. He's been there since a young kid, but there was a lot of drama. High profile, just didn't end right. And the thing that ATT, that's a little bit different from MMA Masters, is ATT is almost like it's almost like a superstar gym. Like, it's not that there aren't local ties, but it's becoming the place where a lot of pros are flocking to go towards to get the good training and stuff like that. And, you know, MMA Masters is brewing a lot of young talent from down here. And so I'm sure that was a lot less stress-free for him being in that kind of a lead-up to the fight. Definitely, you know, come out of this hoping that, you know, still thinking the same way that I wish we would have gotten it a little bit earlier, just because I don't know what to make of Tyron Woodley's career right now and where it stands. You know, I think that there's a couple guys. I know that Dana mentioned that he's got to have a conversation with Donald Cerrone, and that's fine, but I think that we really got to have a conversation about where Tyron Woodley stands. And it's not, you know, I understand that he's been in there and that he has been taking on the best of the best for a long time now. You know, he's probably not losing to the caliber of guys that Donald is, even though Donald's taking on a lot of top guys too, now that you think about it. But it just doesn't even look like Tyron's competitive at all in these fights. Like, there's not a willingness to pull the trigger. He's got that unbelievably nuclear bomb in his hand, and we just don't see him pull the trigger on it very much. It seemed like there was some kind of a pace strategy to get through this, but, you know, I think in a fight with Colby Covington, you got to give him something to think about early on. And if you think you're going to save yourself to be better later on, you're not, because he's probably going to still have just as much in the gas tank late than he is early. And I think that's got to be the case with these guys who are five-round monsters. You got to give them something that's going to make them really, really question what they're doing in there. And I just, Tyron just hasn't delivered that. And, you know, there's really a feeling that he hasn't been competitive in any of these fights now, these last three fights since losing his championship to Kamaru. That wasn't a close fight. The Gilbert Burns fight, he wasn't even there. And this one, you know, more so, but it almost was like he was in there not to lose than he was to go beat Colby. And, the statistics were crazy. They put it up at the screen for that fourth round, which was 113 strikes to 2. That's crazy. You know, and you just saw, like, he was saving himself, but you were saving yourself for what? Because once you got into those later rounds, his output was getting even slower. And so I think from that standpoint, for Woodley, I don't know. I don't know where he goes from here, you know, from being a champion to a big name who's a contender, but doesn't seem like he has any big fights in this division anymore. Doesn't seem like he is competitive in this division anymore. And so what do you do if you're Tyron? Do you, I don't know what his deal is. I don't know how many he's got left, but I imagine for him, there has to be some thought of, hey man, we got to, we got to go out there. We got to figure out a different plan here, of what's happening. So it's wild. Colby ended up getting the win, and he is, he did his thing where he's like, oh, Donald Trump's going to win the election. Donald Trump was actually talking to him on ESPN Plus afterwards. He was on the speakerphone. He goes, quote, I'm your fan. You're my fan. Two of a kind, he said. And Trump tells Colby, I'm very proud of you. Those are tweets from Ariel Helwani. You did have Colby and Kamaru getting into it a little bit during the post game.
No, you didn't. I stood right up. That wasn't
I
even close.
Broke your
no,
face.
Marty Fake Newsman. You broke. You didn't break
your
my face. I got right up and protested
Look
right
at
away.
Me.
That was
Look
a fake stoppage,
me.
Fake ref,
broke
fake fight. Wait
face.
Till I see you next time. Wait till I see you next time, Marty Fake Newsman. You're dead. You're dead.
Am I?
You got unfinished business.
Really?
You better show up.
Really?
I'm coming for you.
You said that last time. What happened?
Yeah, wait till this time. You
yeah,
know who was winning fake stoppage. You didn't break
I
none.
Broke
the only thing
your
you broke
face.
Is your own will. You broke your spirit. That's why you're running from
I
me.
Did?
That's why you're hiding. You ain't nowhere to run, nowhere to hide now. Wait till I see you next time. You didn't finish Tyron Woodley like I did. You're dead. You're on borrowed time.
Who's worried? Hey, I'm not worried about Tyron
shining.
Woodley. You're worried about me. Look at me. Look at me. Here.
Look at you. No one to look at your hairline.
Look
that shit's gone, bro. You're the ugliest dude in the history of the UFC. That hairline's halfway up
your face.
Stop doing steroids. Stop. You didn't break nothing. The
your
only
face.
Thing you broke is your will. You broke your will. You ain't.
Ow, I beat you.
Dude, what are you doing? Foot stomps? You're the boringest champ in the history of this company.
But I
man.
Broke
your
face.
You didn't break anything.
Who do you want to see them fight next? I know that's been the category. What do we do with Colby? What happens with him next? I think that it should probably go like this. In all honesty, I think that the next fight should really be Masvidal. And I don't know if that's going to happen because, you know, I know Masvidal's into this super fight thing and, you know, the way it's waving is towards Nate Diaz and all that type of stuff. And I don't know also that they want to put themselves in a position to be maybe in a wrestling matchup where, you know, he could get outpointed and maybe take away his mantle of being a contender. But if we're going to talk about what fight I would really like to see, I still want to see all that drama unfold. There's a big storyline there. This is kind of going to be up to Colby, too. I really do feel like, look, he was number one contender. He went and beat the former champ. That was good enough to get a title fight for the last guy. It should be good enough for him to go get a title shot. But if they don't believe that, if they believe he's still got to go get some damage done, then, yeah, I got to feel like the obvious fight is him versus Jorge. And if you want to tell me what's a bigger fight, Masvidal versus Nate Diaz again, or him versus Colby, I got to go him versus Colby. I'm sorry. It's a bigger fight. It's a bigger deal. There's bad blood there. There's a past there. There's a lot of stuff. The Nate Diaz fight was organically awesome. I love the BMF stuff. It was a fight the fans immediately wanted to see two dudes throw down. And stylistically is probably going to be a better fight than these two squaring off. But ultimately, if we're going to be talking about the contenders and who deserves title fights, you know, all Jorge really has going for him right now is that, you know, he went the distance with Kamaru and he went the distance with him on a week's notice. So if he goes to beat a Diaz, can he fight right in there? Sure. And if you're Kamaru, who do you want to fight? You probably want to fight Masvidal. He's the biggest name in the division. So he has that going for him. On the other side of it, look, if we're going to be doing a thing here of who is more deserving, if we have a talented welterweight division and who gets the chance to fight for the belt, then Colby's got to go and fight. You know, then Colby has to be in the mix for fighting some of these top contenders. And I know, again, you know, people are going to get pissed because, you know, Leon Edwards is kind of out of the mix here, but that's what happens when you don't fight. Like, you know, there's no bad blood. There's nothing there for anybody to really glam onto when it comes to Leon Edwards. So, you know, Masvidal, if we're going to do this thing, and you know I love him, he's hometown and all that type of stuff, but if we're going to do this thing of he is going to be a title contender, there's two contenders there at the top of the division. He's the big name that carries them, and we want to see him fight for the belt. I really feel like one of those two guys should have to match up with Jorge, and I feel like bigger name winning out should be Colby. Probably stylistically, Leon is a better fight for Jorge, I would think, especially the way he doesn't want to get like outpointed or any of that type of stuff. So there's that's going for him. And then Kamaru taking on Gilbert Burns, you know, I guess we'll figure out what happens with Gilbert on the other side of that as well. You know, does it then become, does Colby await the loser and then fight Gilbert? I don't know. I mean, I feel like if you're Colby, you probably want to get into a matchup around when the welterweight title is to get you boom online to fight Kamaru again, because those guys do have heat. It was a really great first fight, and I would like to see it again. There's no doubt about that. Has he done enough to solidify that? He certainly has. But again, if all these guys are going to avoid each other, it almost becomes, well, who's going to be the fresher guy in everybody's mind to get that title shot? And if George does go out and he does beat a Diaz brother, whichever one it may be, I think a lot of people are then going to go say, well, I just saw George fight. I want to see him fight for the belt with a full camp. So if I was Colby, I would be pushing everything I can to make the Masvidal fight happen. That's the way I would go. Make the Masvidal fight happen in any way you can. And that's the way I think you take out the biggest name. You're going to get a huge payday. The only thing I guess that's weird is you have those two guys. What are they fighting for? They're not really fighting for a belt, but F it. Grudge match, dude. Make some other belt. Make it, you know, the South Florida King belt or something like that. Whatever. Put the BMF title on the line if you want to. Who knows? But I just feel like that's a pay-per-view fight. It doesn't have to exactly. It's, you know, the you know, if you want, you know, put a title fight on that to make that, you know, make it the title fight, the co-main event, have those guys fight because they're a main event fight. And then that's five round fight. Although if you're Jorge, maybe I think it would almost behoove you to have that be a three rounder rather than a five rounder, because you could kind of just empty the gas tank as much as possible to try and finish Colby, more so than a five round fight where Colby can go tick on rounds as much as possible. So if they were to fight, three-round fight wouldn't be a bad strategy for Jorge. Just, you know, with the new contract being what it was, they want him to be a main event fighter and all that type of stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that's up in the air for this division going into the future and going into the fall here of what's going to be the fallout of Kamaru versus Gilbert. Gilbert can win that fight too. What if Gilbert wins? Then does Kamaru get an immediate rematch? How does that go as well? You know, there's we always forget that perfect part of the plan as well. We're all just doing this assuming that Usman comes out on top against Gilbert Burns. He may very well lose. And so if that's the case, then we have another thing thrown into the whole pile. So we'll take a quick break here. We'll get into more of what went down in the card. Future of a couple of legends, Tyron and Donald Cerrone. I'll tell you what I think both of those guys should do. And then We'll hop into some big news this week regarding a free agent signing for the UFC, and we got to get into the main event that was Lubin versus Gauthier in Showtime Boxing. We'll get to that as well. Back after this. All right, welcome back, guys. It's Fighter's Fury here on 790 The Ticket. We roll on this night as we will get a little bit more into the card that was UFC Colby Covington versus Tyron Woodley. Still also have to get into next week's pay-per-view as well, but I'll do quickly Donald Cerrone versus Nico Price. I think that disappointing that we had the eye pokes there. It did cost Nico weirdly. It was cheering afterwards that it was a draw. You know, obviously a lot of love between the two guys. With Donald, first draw in his career, crazy enough as that is. It looked really bad in the first round. Looked like he was on his way to getting finished early. Did show the guts. Did come back a little bit against Nico, but probably lost the fight. If it wasn't for the eye poke, he definitely would have lost the fight. So, I know Dana said afterwards, we got to have a little bit of a talk about what's left for Cowboy at this point. I don't know. I mean, the guy is a solidified, certified Hall of Famer. I don't know if broadcasting is in his career. He's never been a guy who he's been a guy that the media loves to talk to, but he's not a guy that's ever really been, he's never been a guy who's really had the gift of gab. Like, he's just an all-around silent killer badass. I don't know where his finances are at this point as far as where or when he fights. And also, a move like that let's say if Cowboy were to go make a move to Bellator, is that one where Cowboy is one of these guys where I don't know, does that do a huge number for Bellator? I think maybe the first one will, but I think they learn with Chael, it eventually kind of runs out if they're not winning. And he's been taking the best of the best on up until the McGregor fight. Took a little bit of a step back with taking on Anthony Pettis, even though realizing how good Anthony Pettis is, and now Nico Price. His career has been a big wave. The Marlins say riding the wave, that's their thing. You go check out his Wikipedia. It's green and red, green and red, green and red. It just goes up and down. Look, the dude's a monster. He's been in there with the best of them. He's had some crazy good runs. Welterweight, lightweight, doing it whenever, wherever anybody would ask. But I do feel like with his age being what it is, with him being 37 years old and being on this cold streak that he's on, it feels like we're for real the closest to the end with Donald Cerrone than we ever have been. And I don't know what matchup gets him right. I don't know what really engages him. If it doesn't mean playing at the top, because it doesn't feel, that's the same thing with Tyron. It's yes, these guys still got to fight for their careers. And I know Tyron, recently came out the whole thing where, his finances weren't in the best place. And so he still has to fight for a living. And, Tyron Woodley's, people are still going to tune in if Tyron Woodley's on the card for sure. But you've also been at the top of the mountaintop. All right, so you're going to be the guy where people are out there beating Tyron Woodley just to say they beat Tyron Woodley. Is that what it's going to be? I don't know. There are these guys that hang on, Arlovsky, where they hold on forever. And, maybe they'll get a win every now and then. Maybe they'll have a 3-fight win streak sometime in their 40s, and you'll be maybe they're back. But it does feel like it felt like today for both of them that the glory days are behind them. So fighting is a weird thing, man. I never like to tell fighters to retire because it's just them and they can only make that decision. I think that we all get a little bit bashful with, seeing what these guys should do at the end of their career. They're grown men. They can go decide when they want to stop getting punched and kicked in the face for a living. But, as a guy who likes the sport and follows it, I don't think we're ever going to see those guys back at the top again. I don't think we're ever going to see Tyron Woodley be a contender or a champion again. I don't think we're ever going to see Cowboy Cerrone get on one of those hot streaks again. Maybe every now and then he'll pull out a surprise. But I don't think we've, I don't think we're gonna see Cowboy be an elite fighter again. I don't think we're gonna see Tyron Woodley be an elite fighter again. It just feels so far away. Those are the performances we're getting from them. It's not like they're in these fights and one thing goes wrong, and you know, it's a matter of a weight issue or any of that type of stuff. I think they always try and do that stuff as window dressing. You know, maybe Cowboy, they'll do that one more time and be like, Cowboy, why don't you fight at lightweight again? And this will be the one. It's like, nah, all right, we've been down that road. And with Woodley, you know, he's so short, like, what do you fight him at middleweight? Like, does he go and fight, do they pull out, like, if after this fight with Adesanya, if he goes and wins next week, you know, fight, you know, Woodley for the championship or something like that? I don't know. Like, it just doesn't feel like that would go well for him either. It feels like that's going to end up with him getting hurt. So that was one theme. On the one end, you had all these, the two old heads who it felt like we've hit the end of the road with them. Whether that means retirement, I don't know. But what I do think it means is them being, them mattering in any contender or championship picture is done for the time being and probably just done. But on the other end, we did get to see a lot of great youth. We got to see a lot of great talent. Khamzat Chimaev, the knockout that he had on Gerald Meerschaert was awesome. I mean, because I love when there's a lot of pressure on a top prospect to perform and that they blow out of the water what you think that performance could even be. You know, like Sugar Sean O'Malley did this, not this past fight where he lost to Chito Vera, but the fight before that where Sean O'Malley just gets the crazy one-punch knockout and just like, wow. Everybody was looking at this guy to do something special, and he probably even topped what we thought he could do. Same thing with Connor, where when Connor was on the rise at featherweight, we're all sitting here and just being like, all right, how much better could it get? And when he knocks out Jose Aldo in 13 seconds, you're just like, wow. That's what makes you like it. It goes from you being it goes from you being a star to almost like legendary status. So Chimaev doesn't get that because this isn't a championship stage. But when you go into these fights, they get, all right, this dude's doing the smash thing. He's doing, maybe he's the second coming of Khabib. Who knows? Middleweight Khabib. We'll see what he's going to do. And then he goes in there against Meerschaert and just starches him with a monster, perfect right hand. One punch KO in 17 seconds. You're just like, oh my God. All right. He's now 9-0. Looks like we got ourselves like a legitimate star on our hands. And, you know, they could just keep riding this wave because middleweight has been one where, you know, you think about where the title picture is, and this can bring us almost into what we got coming up next week is that, you know, Adesanya's rise was very, very meteoric. It almost was like, you know, a year and a half and he's up into the title picture. Paulo Costa hasn't been around that long and he kind of broke into the scene and made himself a big deal right away. And Chimaev, it feels like the same thing. Like he is skyrocketing to the top of the division very, very fast, 26 years old. And it's just been awesome. You know, he dominated Fight Island. Now he gets this opportunity in Las Vegas and just, unbelievable. Huge knockout, but just knocked the performance out of the park. Wasn't as charismatic on the mic this time around, like, which, you know, I saw he did like the Connor line, 50 G's baby. You know, if I can superstar criticize Khamzat at all, and it's just tough because I know he's not talking in his first language, but he's a little bit of a gimmick stealer. With the first time he was doing Khabib's smash, now he's taking Connor's lines. So, you know, maybe that'll be his gimmick, just stealing people's lines. I don't know. But as far as in the cage, unbelievable. Johnny Walker, also great to see him come back because I think Johnny Walker was probably where Chimaev was a couple years ago, where we were like watching this guy and he was just doing unbelievable stuff. Every time he stepped into the cage, you're just like, what's this guy's performance going to be? And he even tops it. He impregnates your television when he dances to the cage and, you know, he had that terrible shoulder injury that he got from celebrating, a couple bad losses in a row And now he is able to get that win over Ryan Spann tonight. Much needed for him. A lot of pressure on him going into this matchup, and he really shined. And Mackenzie Dern, too. Mackenzie Dern also was great tonight. She went out, and what she was doing to Random Marcos's arm was unholy. I mean, just great jiu-jitsu from Mackenzie. She looked absolutely great. She now has a couple of wins in a row, which is great. You know, she has her one loss against Amanda Ribas, who's no slouch at all. So there's not a lot of shame in having that one in on your record. But, you know, Mackenzie, she looks in fantastic shape, too. She looks like she's really shored things up from that end. So big performances from the youth tonight. The only thing I'm really disappointed is we didn't get to see our boy locally, Miguel Baeza. His fight got scratched. You know, he was supposed to fight Mickey Gall. Then they put in a late replacement. Then something happened. I'm a little foggy on the details. I'll try and find that out for peeps. I saw some like Twitter reports that it might've been COVID related. I don't know. I don't want to, even as much as I already want to speculate on it. So hopefully everything's cool there and we get to see Miguel back in the cage as soon as possible. But, yeah, just a really great night for the youth of the sport. I thought it was great to see all those. Those are always my favorite nights where, you feel good about the future of the sport just because there's just so much talent coming up. I love these types of nights where the young guys are great and it feels like we can, you know, the wheel keeps moving and you can't wait to see the next time they're in the cage to see him fight again. So that's what I took away from tonight. On the other end, because I want to get to a little bit of the matchups for the middleweight championship next week, but speaking of young talent, we had some boxing last night. You had Erickson Lubin on the main event against Terrell Gaucher. And when it was going to set themselves up for a WBC title shot, you know, the criticisms of the fight. Okay, neither one of these guys have fought for a while. So took him a little while, it felt like, to settle in into an actual fight. A lot of it almost felt like you were watching a glorified sparring match. It was super quiet. You know, so it took about to like round 7 or 8 for these guys to even get cooking. But in the midst of that, Erickson Lubin was winning the fight. I'm a big fan of Erickson Lubin. You know, he trains here in West Palm. He's at Kevin Cunningham's gym, used to train in Orlando. There's a couple things that also bother me about Erickson's career. Nothing that's his fault. It's just the sport in general. I hate the fact that you have a bad night in boxing and they banish you almost to the Shadowlands. Like you never are to be seen or heard from again. Like they're still here talking about his Jermell Charlo knockout loss in the first round. It happened 3 years ago. You know, like you look tonight and you see Johnny Walker, right? Johnny Walker lost to Corey Anderson. And this was, you know, a couple of years ago where he loses to a guy who's basically a title contender. He loses to him a year ago, but he gets and then he loses his next fight, but then he's right back into it. And we could just forget about the Corey Anderson loss. It's okay. You know, like he can just move on with his career. He's 28 years old and, you know, Johnny Walker can start thinking about going back again towards the title. But you think a guy like Erickson Lubin, right? And flash upon flash, you know, doing the splits, the pop-up knockouts, Jack and Sledge, great gimmick, a sensational offensive boxer. And there's a couple of things. One, they make it feel like you take this big risk at 21 years old and you get knocked out. And then they change your entire style to where you're not the flash and dash that you were early on in your career. And this isn't a knock at Kevin Cunningham. It's what they do with a lot of boxers where they think because you got knocked out, you have to fight to not get knocked out for the rest of your career. And when I watched Erickson, you see these flashes in there of offense where you're just like, wow, this guy's something special. But you know he's not unleashing the beast as much as he could be because he doesn't want to be over aggressive because he doesn't want to get caught. But the thing is he's not that good a defensive fighter. You know, like he's not getting hit by Gaucher. And so in a fight where neither one of you are that good at defense, the guy with the better offense should go dominate. And I thought that whenever he really cooked it up and turned up the pressure, I thought he clearly looked like the more talented puncher. But when he was leaning back a little bit, when he was trying to not get over exuberant in these exchanges, you know, Gaethje had some moments of success. He even hurt him at one point where it looked bad. And so that'll lead you to believe, yeah, see, this guy's not for real, but it's fighting, man. And I think that, you know, he's going to be something to be feared, and something that's going to get him the championship is going to be a guy who goes in there and is going to make people second guess what they want to do. And I always hate that. I hate it when a guy loses in boxing. We try to completely take away what makes them great, especially when it happened at 21 years old. So that's the only thing. You know, I watched it last night on Showtime, and I'm a fan of him. I got to talk to him right before that loss, I remember. And I've been trying to get him on the show. I haven't been able to have any success getting Erickson Lubin or Kevin Cunningham on the show. It's like, come on, guys, you live down the road. Be friendly neighbors. But either way, that was the only thing I was disappointed in. It's just like, I feel like I watched Erickson Lubin go in there, and I thought he was definitely the more talented fighter than Gaethje, but it felt like they really kept it honed in. They weren't letting him loose, or maybe he wasn't let loose. I don't know. I don't know who to put that on. So that was my big takeaway from yesterday. We'll come back. We'll get to a little bit of UFC 253, which is coming up next week. Israel Adesanya, we're back to Fight Island. He is going to be taking on Paulo Costa for the middleweight championship of the world. Big fight coming up, and so we'll get to that next. Welcome back, everybody. It's Fighters Fury here on 790 The Ticket. Tobin here with you as we'll get into a little bit of next week. We got UFC 253 from Fight Island, which is headlined by a couple of title fights. We got Israel Adesanya versus Paulo Costa for the 185 strap. Israel Adesanya, his last one came against Yoel Romero, winning a unanimous decision, as did Paulo Costa beating Yoel Romero. These guys are both undefeated. You have Israel is 19-0, Paulo is 13-0. And you know, look, this is going to be an interesting matchup for sure. You got a guy in Costa who I think can definitely bring some aggression that will make it fun against Izzy. It's one of those where I got a tough time picking one for sure. I do think that Izzy, the one thing that you got to say about him that is got to make you feel good if you're a Stylebender fan, is that, you know, the guy has been in there now. He's got the experience of being in big fights. It feels like the spotlight's been on him a little bit longer. And so he's going to have this entire week. He's been wanting this fight. These guys have been a little bit bitter towards each other. So it's a fun matchup for sure. And then you also look at the type of fight that Paulo had against Yoel, and it felt like, you know, maybe he was waning a little bit, and that he was having some tough times hitting Yoel as clean as he'd want to. And I think that some of those issues of not hitting a guy who's definitely not as elusive as Stylebender. I would like to see what that speed is like up against each other. I don't know if I have a great gauge of that, although you'd think that Izzy's definitely probably the faster guy, the more elusive guy, the guy who's bringing more tools to the toolbox in this matchup. You know, it's sometimes tough to tell until they're actually in there mano a mano. So this is an interesting one, man. If Izzy gets this, it really puts him in a position where what's left in the division for him, because, you know, he would have taken out a lot of the boogeymen in the middleweight division, with probably like Jared Cannonier is like the next big task at hand. I know him and Darren Till have kind of circled the wagon on each other. There are some fun matchups with Izzy, which is good. As a guy who is flashiest champion, is a guy that isn't boring in the cage, I think a lot of people look at him and say, well, what could really be the key to the puzzle to finishing him? And he has taken on a lot of different styles. I think that's been the thing that's been fun about his career, is he's not a guy who's afraid to take on different types of fighters. He made mincemeat to win the belt out of Robert Whittaker, which was really impressive. The Kelvin Gastelum fight was one of the best fights you'll see. His Derek Brunson fight was super impressive. The Yoel Romero fight, back and forth. You know, I thought that, you know, just did enough to keep Yoel at bay. But Yoel's a beast, man. I mean, Yoel's a beast. And I thought that Yoel versus Paolo, I thought that Yoel lost that fight for sure. But it was a lot closer than you thought. So both of these guys have had close fights with the Soldier of God. You know, you wonder if I guess this one you're probably wondering is, you know, can Costa get him up against the cage? Can there be any of those times where he's cornering Izzy? You know, does it make that distance a factor where Adesanya can do some crazy stuff, can really snipe him from a distance? And if he can corner him at any points, can he unload that power and be vicious enough to put him away? You know, because that's been where he's had his success, is like he gets into these modes where he corrals his opponents, puts them in bad spots, and then just finishes them off and does it, you know, rather quickly. He's not been a guy that's kept a lot of opponents in there for a very long time. Certainly, you feel like if the fight goes longer, that probably benefits Stylebender, that it's going to be a better night for him than if it goes quick. Like it feels like if Costa is going to win this, he's got to win it within two rounds. If he doesn't, it feels like it could be it could be a long night in the cage for him. Now, the thing that is going to be interesting about this is, you know, what is that going to mean for Izzy as far as the first couple rounds are concerned? Is he going to be conserving himself? Is he going to try and, you know, give Paolo a lot of stuff to go forth? Because I think the thing that helps with that is you not only want to have a guy who's going to try and take you out in the first couple rounds, but you want to do it in a manner where you're also having him burn himself out a little bit. And I think that's going to be the interesting thing going into this matchup. So I'm going to go with Stylebender to win this fight. I'm thinking like, I'm going to go with like a fourth round stoppage. I think Izzy's going to find something in there, going to find some holes on Costa. If Costa gets him quick though, that's going to be something for him. I think that'd be fun. I think that, you know, maybe this could be a rivalry that goes forward. These guys, I think, are going to have a fun fight week two, leading up to the promotion of this fight and all that goes into it. So looking forward to it for sure, but I feel like Izzy's going to end up out on top. I do like the way that he's got a little bit more of a toolbox going into this one. As far as the other event in this lovely matchup is concerned, we have the vacant light heavyweight championship with Dominic Reyes taking on Jan Blachowicz, and John Jones is no longer in the 205 division, which is super weird. He is off, you know, doing whatever the hell he's doing until he gets the itch to go to heavyweight. I think the thing that's cool about Dominic, this is the one thing that I think is going to be good for him if he comes out on top of this. With Dominic, if he gets the title against, if he wins this week, I don't feel like there's going to be this. I think it's going to be very similar to when Johnny Hendricks won the welterweight championship the first time around, where it wasn't this feeling of, oh, George is gone. Nah, welterweight actually had a really, really good run. You had Johnny Hendricks, Robbie Lawler have their back and forth for the belt. Robbie Lawler was a hell of a champ, and then Robbie Lawler lost to Tyron. And look, the welterweight division has kind of cranked on pretty great since GSP left. It hasn't had this void. And you think back to that first Johnny Hendricks GSP fight, and a lot of people thought that Johnny Hendricks got the best of GSP that night. And GSP walked away, he left out on top, you know, and, you know, some people were bitter about him for it. You know, you leave, you know, it'd be better if he left with a guy having beat him, but it almost ended up being the best of both worlds, because you have this situation where you have the situation where Johnny was able to take the rub from that fight and become something that was still revered as a champion. And so I think Dominic is in this spot right now where he's got that same opportunity. You know, he went toe-to-toe with John Jones. A lot of people thought that he won that fight. And so if he beats Jan, he may have this opportunity to carry light heavyweight in a post-John Jones world, which never has really happened with the UFC since John's been running the show. Even when DC was the guy, nobody gave DC credit because everybody saw DC lose to John. And so I think that this is a great opportunity for 205 to go into this new era. I don't know if it'll be the same. We're never going to see anybody have a reign of terror like John had over the light heavyweight division. The guy is maybe the best to ever do it. But I think that it's helpful that we're in this spot where if Dominic gets this win, if he's able to beat Jan Blachowicz, then it's going to be okay. If he loses, if Jan ends up winning, one, I think it's tough because, you know, you kind of have this anonymous dude as champion, even though he's a badass. You know, he's been around for a long time, and, you know, he's 37 years old. It's okay. I mean, it's like I don't want to take away anything from Jan if he goes and wins the title. You know, he's beaten, he's been on a nice run with beating, you know, Luke Rockhold and Corey Anderson and Jacare. So he's been on a good run, but he's 37 years old. You would like the championship, ideally, and I gotta think you would like it to go to a young individual, 30 years old, right into the prime of his career, and just went toe-to-toe with John Jones in a decision. A lot of people thought he got effed. They thought he got screwed. So I think that is the real hope here. If you're the UFC brass, I know that they never like to put it, you know, say they're favoring anybody, but how do you not favor Dominic Reyes going into this? I think he gets it done. I think he is gonna. I think that he is got a lot in mind as far as what it would mean for him to be champion. And I think if he is champion, I do think that it'll usher in a good spot for light heavyweight. It won't have to be this, you know, this black cloud of it's never going to be anything without John Jones. Nah, I mean, if he ends up being the champion, he's a great champion to be at 205 because he went toe to toe with John Jones. And only a judge's decision was the factor in whether or not he was the best to do it. A very razor thin one to beat the best that ever did it. So I hope that's the case. That's what I'm coming into this week. You know, if Jan wins, cool. But the ideal world, the baton, the UFC world, I think even, you know, the fans would like to see Dominic Reyes kind of get his. He almost is the uncrowned king, you know, like, all right, man, you did all this, you did all this complaining, rightful complaining, but complaining that you should have gotten the rub. Here it is. You know, you're taking on a guy who's, you know, almost, you know, a lot older than you. You know, you feel like you got the more well-rounded skill set. Go in there and take it. And if he's champ, I almost feel like we have a Johnny Hendricks type passing of the baton where, you know, we have a different champion, but we got a champion that at least is in a spot where, okay, it's fine now. We have a guy who went toe to toe with the best to do it from my standpoint. So we'll see what ends up going there. That we got that coming up next week. Other big news that happened this week before we get out of here is Michael Chandler officially signed to the UFC, and footnote is apparently the fill-in. If Khabib or Justin Gaethje can't go in the main event. So not only does he get to fight, but he gets to possibly fight right away for the championship. And I got to say, Chandler's got some tools to beat Khabib. So I would like to see that. I'm so glad he's in the UFC. There's not a free agent, or there's not a guy that's been out of the UFC that I think I've wanted to see more in the UFC than Michael Chandler, especially seeing the success that Eddie Alvarez had in the UFC. Michael Chandler is one of those guys like Bellator. I could take or leave Bellator a lot of nights, but if Michael Chandler is fighting, I'm going to watch. And he isn't one of the old guys who's been there and was like, oh, they signed Fedor, they signed Chael, they signed Chikango. No, like Michael Chandler is like been the face of Bellator and for a lot of eras of Bellator. And has been in some of their best fights. And so I'm happy that he's going to get this stage here in the UFC to go perform. It's a little bit weird that he's the backup fighter. So hopefully he gets a nice trip to Abu Dhabi. And, you know, maybe some crazy opportunity will come his way. You know, maybe Gaethje will get COVID or something like that. I don't know. But pretty wild that he's down the stage. Now, I know, I guess what they reported that they tried offering Dustin that fight. Dustin said no, that Dustin wanted to show the same respect to Tony that Tony showed to him, not going for another fight because they're almost in this weird unity of, you know, so. And Tony Ferguson's apparently not going to be on the card now. They're going dark on him. Look, UFC's not playing with this negotiation thing. They are going to the spot where they're not playing ball with anybody. It's kind of like take it or leave it, unless you like really get them over the table like Masvidal did with Usman. You know, they're probably going to leave the fights that we want to see on the back burner. So I don't know. But having Michael, either way, having Michael Chandler in the lightweight division is really, really cool. So I'm happy that they signed him, and I think it's going to be really awesome for the promotion. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in this week. We will talk to you guys same time, same place next week. You guys have the show, download the podcast, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow, 6 a.m., 6 to 10 a.m. We'll have a full reaction to a crazy sports weekend. And enjoy the rest of your Sunday, everybody.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.